And now we're fortunate to have Dr. Richard Melkreit here to talk about a particular state's experience. I don't know if everyone knows here that each state has a state HAI coordinator, a healthcare associated infection coordinator. And that for the state of Connecticut, that is Dr. Melkreit. He is the coordinator for healthcare associated infections in the Connecticut Department of Public Health. In this priority, he is to expand the focus of HAI surveillance and prevention to the full range of all healthcare settings through strategic planning, partnerships between the state health department and stakeholders working in these settings. Another goal is to increase the use and usability of high-quality surveillance data to enhance partnerships and prevention activities. Prior to this role, Dr. Melkreit has served in the Department of Health's Infection Disease Division, its AIDS Division, and the Family Health Services Section. He received his medical degree from the University of Connecticut, where he specialized in pediatrics and is an alumni of Wesleyan University, like myself. So I had to throw that in. Thanks, Dr. Melkreit.
Thank you, Yale. I think you forgot to note that the Wesleyan football team is 7-0, and we won the Little 3 championship last weekend, so all is well. Bill Belichick, by the way, if you're a Patriot fan, went to Wesleyan. And I'm wearing Red Sox tie, so everything is fine with me. I would like to say that my slides, some of them, I didn't put them all in, are in a handout on the sideboard, so you may pick it up. When you're going to pick up the ASTO things, you can pick up my thing, too. It's the slides from this presentation. I think, clearly, and I think that you probably got the theme that came through, not explicitly, but very clearly from Dr. Wright's and Dr. Montero's presentation, is this issue is not going away. I was involved, as you heard from my bio, with AIDS when it started up, and then genetic testing expanded. I got into that whole thing, and then bioterrorism. I got into that whole thing. None of these things have gone away. They may not be the hottest issue of the moment, but they are not going away. This issue will not go away. And it's going to be a growing area of public health. So I'm glad you're here, and if you could spread the word. I mean, that's what we're going to try to ask you to do, is go out and spread the word that, people, especially young people coming to public health, and certainly people interested in health, provision of public health, and in provision of clinical care, work together and maybe try to think of this as a possible career path, because this is very important area for the future. I looked at one of these old books. We have these wonderful old books in our health department. I think most state health departments do. They're very often are bound. They're like, the annual report, and they go back to, it was 1870 or something like that, and you see all sorts of amazing infections and epidemiology in there. And they had one from, I think, the 50s or early 60s, and it was interesting. They had a picture of people in the health department, which was just chock full of physicians. There were a gazillion physicians in the health department at that time. Now there are relatively few physicians and nurses in the health department. It's beginning to grow again, and I think this theme of this issue will hopefully kind of foster again that reintegration of medical care. The president's charge that Dr. Montero has given, I think, is key to that. Okay, so on to the presentation per se. The genesis started, and as I think Dr. Wright noted, with hospitals. You notice that GAO report talked about hospital infections. One of the things I'm very concerned about, and I know this is actually a CDC slide and from DHHS, which I shamelessly stole, and I put public health in the middle there. That's my little addition. We're dealing with a whole system of healthcare, patients going in and out of healthcare settings, different settings, the same patient with different providers, going out into the community and back, and we're seeing spread of infections, especially drug-resistant organisms, into the community or from the community back into healthcare settings. So this is a public health, population health issue, but each one of these facilities is critical to the piece, but you need somebody to help kind of work the system and get everybody to work together, because it's the same patients that everybody's seeing, but it's outside of their area of control, and they need some help coordinating that. And I think that's an important public health issue. So that's public health role for us. So as you've kind of talked about this, our idea, first that came to us was, that created our program was advocates went to the legislature and said, we think that hospitals should be held accountable, put their names up on, the wall of shame, on the website with, South Haven General Hospital has a rate of such and such, they're bad, nobody wants to go there anymore, and they'll either collapse or they'll become good and become a good hospital. Well, I think obviously transparent data is very important. That may be overstating the power of the data. But what it does do is it opened up the possibility of true public health activity, which is data. We're a very data-driven profession, which is fantastic, and we can find commonality with the medical profession in this. We're also data-driven. And so the public reporting can be kind of morphed into a true public health surveillance and validated data, good quality data, because the medical folks said, you know, if you're going to hold us accountable, you got to make sure the data is really consistent, that we're all counting things the same, and that nobody's gaming the system or, like, you know, shading a little bit, maybe undercalling, overcalling, because maybe they're too aggressive in their calling. So that's an important role for us. And certainly in prevention collaboratives, individual hospitals need to, and other healthcare settings sometimes need to get together, especially if they're taking the same patients under their wing, working together to reduce the infections in those populations of patients as a collective. And that's what we can help do, is kind of lead, maybe bring resources to, and kind of, in public health, we do lots and lots of collaboration all the time across a variety of organizations, not just one health system. Health system may be very good at coordinating within the health system, but how about across health care systems? They need some third party, and that's a role we can play. And then obviously we can try to get federal resources if they're available, and the federal government's been very generous to the extent that you can be in this area, so we can help kind of organize that activity. And then this whole area of antimicrobial resistance, and particularly goes back to that slide where we're talking about patients going from setting to setting, antimicrobial or bacteria that are resistant to various antibiotics, and other antimicrobials, that issue is something that's definitely a population health issue that intersects with medical care. So we started again with, you know, and we started very slow. We had an advisory committee that was very kind of very conservative. They wanted very good data. So we just had one acute care hospital starting, or one ICU in each acute care hospital reporting to us initially. And now we're mirroring, as Dr. Wright alluded to, we're mirroring the CMS, what CMS is requiring. And that was a nice synergy, because the healthcare system said, you know, and the people in the healthcare system said, we have to do this for our CMS, you know, for all the good reasons. CMS wants to make sure that that HAIs are reduced to improve the quality of care and reduce the cost. What can public health people help us with is making sure, again, that data and the data system, the NHSN you heard about, is something that we can really use. We need more technical assistance. Even, you know, CDC helps us, but we need even some local technical assistance. We need some validation, people to go chart reviews and check the data to make sure the data is really accurate, and train us and retrain us on how to do it better and better. And that was a role that we could do. So that's how we've been, and our advisory committee said, yes, mirror what that rollout of the CMS requirements. So we're helping each other, you know, and I think that really gives us an important role with the medical community, is so they can see the, quote, value, I hate the term, but I'm going to use it, value added of interfacing with us. Because, you know, it takes time to talk to people in public health. They don't have time. So it has to be something that's really useful for them. And this is the role that keeps on rolling out. There's lots and lots of things that CMS is going to be requiring going forward. And the other thing that we're very lucky in public health is we have good relations with our hospital association, with the CMS quality improvement organizations, because the quality improvement world is a whole group of professionals with a whole group of talents and so forth that can be brought together in partnership. They're better than me at trying to talk to people about how to actually do specific activities to prevent HAIs. So I can be a convener to get these two groups to work together. Again, the nice thing about having the targets, you saw this from Dr. Wright, again, it gives us overall kind of something to aim for. And, you know, it's not just one hospital or another hospital saying we want to aim for this ourselves, which is fantastic. But they can know that the whole country, is aiming in the same direction, and we can share benefits. We can also share reports on how progress is going. And see, for instance, as Dr. Wright was talking about, the concerns about the urinary tract infections, but in particular about C. difficile, means that we need to be thinking about these issues as a whole, and to bring both national and local resources to bear. This is in Connecticut. This is that, you know, kind of the wall of, and this is not shame here, this is the wall of success of using the data to drive prevention activities. This is for central line infection, bloodstream infection, reduction. And as you see, our hospitals are either kind of hitting the mark or even exceeding the mark nationally, and we're very glad to see that. And then we can roll it up into a state level, which is one of the things that public health is very good at, is rolling up and down the data and analyzing in different ways to show what some of the regional issues are, and again, to help focus from the national level, which is a very high, is very hard to deal with, 50 states and 5,000 hospitals. We have 30 hospitals. You have, what, 20? 26. California, God bless them, I think has 440, which is a lot less than 5,000. So, you know, there's some ways we can start to create a network, a team working in public health, and that gives something to the public, to the people in the medical system, is a team of people on the national level can set benchmarks using, you know, with high-level expertise, with people, you know, the best thoughts and thinkers in the country in these areas, can help set those national benchmarks, and then we as a state can kind of work with our health hospitals and saying, are you moving, in other healthcare settings, are you moving down, are you hitting that national prevention target? And as like Dr. Wright said, nationally we can see we're hitting it. In Connecticut, we look at the very same data and we can see we're hitting it. So that's good. Maybe if we weren't, and let's say it was hitting it nationally and Connecticut was not, then we need to redouble our efforts. Again, something that I think public health system can bring to the medical system is saying, okay, you know, this hospital may be fine, but there's five other hospitals in our state that need help. Maybe we can get you all together to work together to see how we can disseminate the best practices from what's working for you here over here. And they like hearing about what's going on around the country, but let me tell you, the people in the medical setting that we talk to really are interested in what the hospital next door is doing. You know, they know those folks. They train together. So it really helps, I think, disseminate best practices. We're also looking at this very critical issue of drug resistance, and CDC did a marvelous report, if you get on the CDC website, about antimicrobial or antibiotic drug resistance. It's, a real landmark paper, and it is presented in a way that's very accessible to people of different levels of sophistication. And we're trying to, again, take that leadership from the federal level and then implement it on the state level. And as you can see, we're able to demonstrate. In our state, we have a big problem with vancomycin-resistant enterococci. It's in the bloodstream, and these infections in the bloodstream of the CLABSIs. We see a very high, we saw a very high rate in our state. We're able to track its improvement over time. We're not tracking down yet. But at least we know where we're at with some of these things. And again, by being able, the public health people can bring that kind of ability to cut and slice data in different ways and focus different ways to the medical system. We're also able to kind of say to everybody, again, we're cheerleaders, and I think this is a nice thing, to say to the public health system in our state, you know, we're doing okay in terms of central line infections, but don't get too full of yourself, because compared to the nation as a whole, we're like, okay, you know, we're not necessarily, yeah, you're all seeing significant reductions. We're much lower than where we started back in 2006, 2000, which is the that SI, so-called SIR. It's a sophisticated metric data point that shows kind of like where the lighthouse is that we're trying to get away from that rock and get out into open sea. So that's very nice. We can show them that, but we can show them that we are improving. Our SIR metric is decreasing. It's down to 0.627, but it's not necessarily even quite matching what's going on nationwide. So again, we can help motivate the individual facilities. With the central line infections, we're seeing the same sort of thing, where we're actually, the first two bars are showing how we're doing last year and the beginning of this year. We're tracking real time and getting real time data to people. And we want to get to that 0.75, as Dr. Wright was talking about. We also are able to kind of, and I think one of the things that the public health is kind of surprisingly can do is bring certain metrics that affect practice very directly into this setting, you know, and that certainly the catheter device utilization ratio, which is basically the percentage of patients that have a catheter in a given setting at a given day, is something you want to decrease, because if you don't have a urinary catheter, you're less likely to get urinary infection, and catheters stick around too long. So we're able to track that and find that our catheter rates are still too high. Okay, as you saw, our infection rates are still too high. So it says we still got to push on trying to pull these catheters, even though people say, you know, we really have a policy in our hospital. Well, we can look at the data from NHSN, and we can look at the data because of NHSN. We can look at the same data the hospitals have and say, yes, that may be your policy, but look at your catheterization utilization ratio. Look at the exact data you've got. That really helps. You know, very often, as you know, in public health, if you're public health people, everybody has lots of opinions, and this is the way things are. When you actually look at the data, you find some interesting things. So we may have policies in place, but those ratios should be down by 0.5, and they're not, so they're too high. So now we're developing partnerships. We are, Dr. Wright was talking about the Partnership for Patients. Our Partnership for Patients Health Education Network or provider is our hospital association. Again, they're very good at talking to people about the national guidelines. They're going from facility to facility right now, talking about those 10 Partnership for Patients metrics that everybody is trying to improve. Central of the catheter urinary infections are one of those. They're too high in our state. And what happens, what they're able to do is actually call into us when they're having a meeting and talk to us about what we're seeing in the NHSN. So we're actually offering individual technical assistance to the facilities in conjunction with the Hospital Association, Partnership for Patient Health Education Network, facility by facility. And that's been very powerful. I think we identified certain facilities that are contributing an excess number of these infections, and they're the ones that we're targeting for what's going on. We can apply the same sort of thing to surgical site infections. There are two in the National Action Plan right now. There are two types of infections that we're tracking. Colo means colon surgery, and the other is abdominal hysterectomy. And we're able to again see that we are making some significant progress, at least in the hysterectomies, not so much the colon surgery. So we can kind of, I think, give that feedback to people nationally. So we kind of continue to work on these things. You've heard about outbreaks. I mean, what I've talked up to this point is what I would call endemic public health medical relationship. You know, these are the endemic issues that, you know, there's surgeries, people are getting surgeries, they're getting infections, people are getting catheters near their heart, and those are getting infected. Those are things that are kind of endemic. And then you get these certain outbreaks or things that are critical, kind of new emerging problems. And certainly the antimicrobial resistance with carbapenem-resistant Enterobacteriaceae. These are very scary bugs. Some of these bacteria are resistant to every antibiotic we have. So we want, and you see, now it's spread around the country. We really need to start tracking this, and CDC has worked out some very nice plan, which I think us and other states are beginning to use. And so we brought the CDC plan. We brought this chart showing that Connecticut is in the blue now. We had a wonderful student from the University of Texas, actually, summer intern. She is an MPH student, and she did a survey. We found that we're in the blue because we had two isolates that was sent down to CDC. This is not nationwide reportable right now. We had two isolates that went down to the CDC lab, so we got on to the into the blue, you know, here. Okay. She did a survey, again, using some instruments the CDC shared with us. Again, public health, you know, brought this forward. And that showed that we had 108 isolates last year in laboratories that they found, and that there were approximately 76 patients in hospitals that had CRE. So we knew of two cases, and yet when we did the survey, we found that there's probably 70 to 80 patients and a greater number of isolates. So very sobering data. We took it to the medical community. We developed an ad hoc group to talk to us about this. And they said, yes, you really need to make this reportable in Connecticut. So it wasn't like a pushback, like, oh, we have too much to do, now you're going to give us more work and all that. They said, no, we need to do this. And we worked out with them the most efficient way to do that. So it's a partnership between public health and the medical system. I think we were able to really show each other's strengths. Medical folks are the ones who get the hands-on information. They can really get the best data. We're the ones who can kind of give the big picture. And that was a really beautiful example, I think, of what the president's charge is here, what we're trying to do to integrate medical care and public health. With vancomycin-resistant enterococci, we're beginning to actually see a drop, believe it or not. Even though when that little line that says audit period begins, we increase the validation of our data, and we think it would bump the rates up. The rates for VREs are going down. So we can certainly, by doing the kind of work we're doing, I think, is have an effect on some really critical issues. We've worked in prevention collaboratives. This was actually due to This was the CDC created a very nice survey of for long-term care facilities, which we gave to them. We identified, from their perspective, C. difficile was really critical, but they needed assistance. And what they really needed some assistance with, we were able to work with the Public Health Foundation to get them that assistance, was some real expertise in how to assess this problem and to make some changes with the very tight resources that long-term care facilities have. They did what they call it a cause and effect or fishbone diagram, and right off the top, they found a whole slew of issues that are why CRE is high. So you're not just kind of fetching at them, you got too much CRE, you got to do something, your facility's dirty. No, they were able to identify what their issues were and start to work on them in a prevention collaborative that we were able to fund with CDC funding. And with assistance from the Public Health Foundation. So again, I think our convening capacity brought us resources from CDC, brought us resources from the Public Health Foundation that got right to, and there's about 25 individual healthcare facilities benefiting, being able to do this work with the kind of coaching that they needed to get this kind of work done, that they would not have gotten done if it wasn't, Public Health didn't have an active role. This is they've also been able to actually give us data. They're not using NHSN, as Dr. Wright mentioned. There's very few long-term care facilities in NHSN right now. But one of the things that we've noticed in public, I think we've all noticed in public health, is we're very incremental. And so this is self-reported data, and we were able actually to match it to the way NHSN can present the data, which is very nice. So I think it's beginning to get them used to the idea of collecting this data in a systematic way that's, again, public health people are very good at systematic collection of data, and to be able to, so they can compare each other to each other, but also that they can they can compare to themselves over time. So they're doing this by hand right now. The data is like, oh, okay. I think NHSN will make it much better, and we're going to begin to start enrolling some of them in NHSN, encouraged by the fact that they had success in this prevention collaborative this past year. We're also helping them track time. I think as public health people, we really need to be respectful of the amount of time it takes, and so we're tracking time when we do these prevention collaboratives to try to see how much effort is putting into this so that we're respectful of that and to see if we can get them resources they need to make these things successful. So far, not too bad, about 10 hours a month per facility for the respondents in this particular prevention collaborative. But also it helps us know that if we can make our public health interventions tighter on time for them, all the better. So, you have to put in some time to collect this data, but we're trying to use it to improve the efficiency of our work. The other beautiful thing is we can take the same sort of data collection. This is from the hospitals it's part of state reporting in our state, for the antimicrobial resistance collaborative. This is the second collaborative we're doing to reduce antimicrobial resistance in networks of facilities serving the same patient population. Because this is state reportable anyway, they already have to collect this data. So the beauty of public health is we can now really use data for action because we already have it in a surveillance system. So if the surveillance system is really effective, it has to be used for action. On the other hand, the other beauty of it is that once we do start collecting these systems of data, I think we can start to feed it back to the public health, to the medical community in a way that really works for them, but also help them work with their own data. NHSN lets them manipulate and analyze their own data. And Rich Rodriguez, our NHSN guru in our state, is going facility by facility, training them on analysis and spending time with them to helping them analyze their data. You couldn't do that on a national level. We can do that on a state level. And they're doing this with MRSA as well. And we're comparing this to what we're doing statewide. So these two are from people in a prevention collaborative, and this is our statewide picture. Right now, we just started doing this surveillance. We haven't seen any statewide effect yet. But we'll be able to see, I think, be able to track the state as a whole and track the facilities that are in our prevention collaborative, which is not everybody in the state, and be able, again, I think, demonstrate to the medical community why it's important and valuable to be in a prevention collaborative. Because I suspect we'll see, this has happened before, folks in the collaborative drop their rates compared to people who are not. Dr. Wright mentioned the Emerging Infection Program. This is, I think, really a critical program. We're one of the 10 sites for this. We try to make the data as nationally representative as we can. No one health facility can do this, and we're going to be tying the research that we do through this collaborative with what they call the prevention epicenters to, again, make this information particularly relevant to the medical community. But people in the medical community and the public health community both can agree we need to know what exactly is the snapshot of healthcare-associated infections now. Where are the antibiotics being used? Where are the antibiotics being used inappropriately? So we can really target our interventions both at the healthcare facility level and our tracking nationally. So that's what we're involved with there. And an interesting data here shows that pneumonias are actually as important as surgical site infections as a contributor to HAIs, which is something we did not know before we did this study. You've heard about the outbreaks. You heard about the couple of infamous outbreaks coming out of New Hampshire. This is the fungal meningitis multi-state outbreak, which you probably heard about. How many people have heard about the multi-state outbreak? Okay. Well, I have to give kudos to my colleague, Marion Kiner, who is like me, only she's like, whew, she's unbelievably wonderful. And she and a physician called her and said, there's a patient with fungal meningitis. I don't know what's going on. One thing happened to another. Within a week or two, there's identified a multi-state outbreak based on the New England Compounding Center, compounding pharmacy that have tremendously contaminated medication that was being injected in people's spines, and people are still suffering and dying, and there's been many deaths due to this. This shows how our medical system is working. It's working across states. It's working across health facilities, as Dr. Montero was talking about. This is where public health has a critical role. No one, people at Vanderbilt Health Center would not be able to manage this. This really needed both the medical system and the public health system working in the FDA and the CDC working in concert to get a handle on this terrible outbreak. So in other words, we're in a very interconnected world, and I think this shows that. We're in a very interconnected medical system. Even though we are very federal, these medications went all over the country. So we need to be, as public health, need to be involved, because otherwise there's really nothing, very little that any individual health provider can do about something like this. Okay, and this just shows kind of a sense, there is a very big boo-boo. I didn't put the Public Health Foundation up there in the upper corner, but there's in the dark blue, you have the federal partners. This is just the partners of the State Health Department from HAI program from my perspective. We have the dark blue are the federal partners. The red are the national associations and national organizations that have an important role in this area. The kind of light green to the around 4 o'clock are our state organizations, our state quality improvement organization, health department, hospital association, et cetera, CIDS is the Infectious Disease Society local chapter. Our hemodialysis quality improvement organization, you get the idea. And the long-term care facility organizations have been tremendous partners, including the for-profits. Sometimes people kind of get into these kind of a little attitude about, well, they're the for-profit people. They've been tremendous. The for-profit long-term care organization has been our biggest booster. Down on the bottom, we have we do have a state plan. We have organizations that advise us or multidisciplinary groups that advise us. Again, an important role for state health. And then further around towards 7 o'clock, we have the people in the facilities that are taking the lead with prevention. They need, on prevention of infectious diseases, they need to have all of these folks. We're helping them deal with this tremendous issue. Local health is a critical issue, and I'd be interested during the discussion if anybody wants to talk more about how we work in making sure that public health is integrated. I think that's an important growth area. Local public health agencies can work in this area, I think, is an area that of particular interest to me. I think we really need to continue to work on this. Consumers and policymakers drive a lot of this. They write laws, they get in the press, and that's great. They really drive this bus, and they're an important part of the whole picture. And then the individuals, as you can see. And then, in the orange, the individuals on the front line who make these things happen. It doesn't happen without them. And then the schools are an important player, which we are beginning to work with. There are, the 10 essential services of public health. If you actually looked at, and I did this, kind of mapped this to the program that we have, anything that's kind of in the red is clearly a healthcare-associated infection program activity that's clearly one of the 10 essentials. And we do it. That's one of our activities. The light blue, diagnose, investigate. We certainly do investigation. Diagnosis, I think, is more probably a frontline clinical activity. The enforced laws and regulations, that's our state surveyors, which in our agency is actually in our agency. in our state health department. And then linking people to care, ensuring care, that was probably some of the partners, but not us. But we do many, was that 10 or, I would say 8 of the 10 are certainly within the purview of an HAI program. We recommend that you contact, if you have interest and you're being in this room, shows you do have interest, your own state HAI program, and take a look on the CDC website. I think that's the URL. This is Connecticut's in 2 pages. It basically kind of gives some data from CDC's perspective on what we do and what we've done. And then if you see on the very bottom right, that's our plan and some reports on what we've done. And on the left is the contact person, generally the HAI coordinator. And I highly recommend, if you haven't talked to your HAI coordinator and you're interested in, we're in collaboration, this is a good way to kind of get a little background on what they're doing and to how to make a contact. So with that, I want to thank you, and we'll have some discussion.
Thank you so much, Dr. Melkreit. So I think you've seen from this presentation exactly what we aim to, which is moving from a national federal perspective to state level organizations to individual state activities. Really, it's a partnership to address public health issues and an emerging public health crisis, healthcare associated infections costing a lot of money, harming a lot of people. So a perfect opportunity for public health to really come to the forefront and take an active role in solving this public health problem. And that, as you just saw, partnerships are key to attracting that. So with that, I want to see if there's any questions to open up to the panel.
First of all, thank you very much to all of you. It was very enriching as far as the discussion. And it was a good way of missing lunch. My question is regarding the data, the comparative data, specifically in the long-term care arena and subacute care. So the first and last thing.
Yes. And you know, Dr. Namali Stone at CDC, who's kind of their lead gerontologist, ID person, who's kind of taking the lead in this, is worked with a group to come up with some modifications of McGreer and, you know, updates. And I think that's really going to be informing, going forward, will be informing NHSN. But what we're focusing on right now is getting facilities enrolled to use the C. difficile, what they call lab ID event, and the MRSA lab ID event, which are basically, you know, it's triggered by a positive lab test, and then you get some demographic data and you go forward. So that's what we're going to focus on now, rather than get into some of the other areas, you know, but eventually we'll get there, and we'll be using probably the modified McGreer will be the basis of all this. Healthcare. Yeah, healthcare, right.
Right.
That's my favorite slide. I think that's such a critical issue. Yeah, and you know, I'm like, yeah. Steal it. I mean, I stole it. You know, it's a really critical issue because, you know, I think the way things start out, I mean, the majority of the resources traditionally are in the acute care settings, and obviously a lot of the infections are in the health, you know, the acute care setting, but not all of them by any stretch. There's an awful lot in dialysis, you know, there's an awful lot in long-term care. I think because these are harder to get at, you know, because they have less resources for infection prevention, settings, you know, and it's, you start with the hospitals, that's great, then you got to move. And I think that's, I think the federal government has really taken leadership in that as Dr. Wright was talking about, the rollout of the additional, you know, kind of versions of the plan. I think that's been very helpful, because when I first started, it was, you know, back in 2008, it's like, not, you know, it's healthcare associated, but everybody would, you know, you see their slide set, it would say hospital, or they would slip out of their mouths, you know, and we have these, like, you know, little cat fights about that. You really do need to not just, you know, cut out the word hospital and put in healthcare. You really need to modify the whole program to really deal with this, as you know better than I do. So I think we're all on the same page with that. It's good to start with the success, and you can learn a lot from the acute care setting, but move forward. I think one of the beauties are there's the, again, stimulated by CMS, and based on the Vermont so-called cluster model, where the prevention collaborative is not just the hospital or a bunch of hospitals working together, which is a great prevention collaborative, by the way, but it's like the hospitals and the nursing homes and the long-term acute care hospitals, which are, there's a lot of antimicrobial resistance in there, home health. And the ambulatory surgical centers are working, they're following the same patient population, have them be in the prevention collaborative, and then they start really talking about issues like transfer. And are we transferring information correctly and all that? And how are we collaborating? And in our state, the antimicrobial resistance collaborative is a cluster model, communities of care model. Collaborative, so it tries to deal with that. And that really does, and there's been some remarkable results of that, where people are beginning to really work across settings and support each other, and I think that's going to get at a lot of what you're talking about.
Let me just add to what he said. Clearly, we understand the problem you mentioned, but there are so many barriers. We'll get there. You know, if you look at the GAO report that was written in 2008, was released in 2008, there was a great concern that there wasn't even surveillance done at the hospital level, the amount of surveillance. And you can see where we've moved since then. We're in the same position now in long-term care that we were with in acute care hospitals 5-7 years ago, that there's just no data there. It's compounded by the fact that there's not the expertise at the long-term care facilities to manage and to document these infections. You're just what we need across this country is consultants, people that have that expertise, because an individual nursing home generally cannot afford an infection preventionist. They don't have the expertise. I'll also say in ambulatory surgical, you know, we were at phase one and we were trying to decide what phase two was going to be. It was right on the cusp of the 80,000 people in Nevada being exposed to the healthcare-associated infection due to their ambulatory surgical centers. And so that was our focus. But the main problem there, again, is frequently the ambulatory surgical center never finds out they've had an infection. They release those people home, they show them back up to their primary care doctor or to the emergency room, and so crosswalking that and getting the surveillance data, we're working on those problems, but there are some substantial barriers as it relates to ambulatory surgical long-term care, et cetera.
It is a process, and we need to go stage by stage. I think that where did you get the most bang for the buck? Was clearly with the hospitals, ambulatory surgical centers, dialysis centers. Long term, there is some people talking about all of those small procedures, ambulatory procedures that take place in clinicians' offices. And then you start expanding too much and you lose sense of where you're going to get the biggest outcomes. That doesn't mean that there are no risks in the others. But as we move the system and it gets more mature, and this becomes a culture of the hospitals. So you were talking about retiring measures because we already reached 99%. So what's next? How do we change those things at export to the other members of those groups is what is going to be quite tricky. And as hopefully healthcare reform gets to be more 100% used by all states, it is in all states, but the expansion is not. As we move into the data components of healthcare reform, we need to figure out how to properly mine the healthcare information exchanges. so we don't duplicate systems and become and make it more effective and financially viable. There is no data piece that is free to collect. Everything has a cost. How do we pay for it? How do we add to it? And in these new discussions of privacy that go into many different areas, how much is too much? You know, it is always a key thing to keep in mind.
Time for one more question. I see it right in the back.
Well, you know, everything's cooler in California. That's all I can say. It is. California's a wonderful place. I think this. It's interesting. I'm glad you brought this issue up. This issue of local health, and every state is very different. And it's. I mean, this state, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts and Connecticut, are very different than Texas, you know, or Missouri in the structure, or Maryland. I mean, I think I remember a wonderful talk from the. I think it was Montgomery County, which is next to next to D.C., and they had like 800 people in the health department. The state health department in Connecticut has 800 people, or less now. I mean, you know, the whole state health department does, and certainly our local health departments don't. I think we do need to. There's going to be a struggle to kind of work on this. So obviously, I think you know outbreaks and that kind of partnering around outbreaks, and I think for my planning, we got to work. You know, we got to work on that. I think promoting. Especially in long-term care facilities, vaccination. Maybe we can partner around, you know, flu vaccination campaigns. That in particular is a challenge. I mean, the hospitals, at least in my state, they're leading the charge. You know, it's like they're mandating it and all that. Long-term care is a different animal, but that's a healthcare associated infection if you're giving people flu inside the long-term care facility. And then I think certainly education, community education around antimicrobial use is something maybe our small local health departments could get involved in. So we're trying to struggle with this too. I think it's going to be something we need to work on.
It's one of those things that are perfect for the partnerships. And there is no state that has everything going on well for them. And as we move forward, we learn from each other. We have each a different structure. So sometimes we look at the report, at the final report, as the aim of our reporting systems, and that's not the aim. Sometimes we tend to confuse the final product with what we got into this business for, and it's to prevent infection. So we need to create those systems for immediate response and action based on the findings. We need to mature the system and figure out better ways to partner with the locals and states where that is not happening. I fully agree with you. I wouldn't chastise the infection control practitioners in as a class, because it's the same as if we say that the states don't work or the locals don't work. We all do good things and we all don't. So trying to identify where the flaws are is part of what we need to do together. Whatever we can do, when I talk about integration, this is one of those things. It can work, but it doesn't come easy and is not free. We need to put up the time, the effort, and the attitude to make it work. Oh, the first couple of meetings that I had with my infection control practitioners and the administrators in the hospitals, because we got them engaged, because what I found, and I don't know if it applies in California to your facility, is that the front people is kind of thrown under the bus. They are left there alone, and in long-term care facilities, they change one every 2 months. So it is impossible to have continuity, proper training, and proper systems. So we engage the administrators and make them the responsible party for this, so we could connect those dots.